All right, we're continuing our study in the Law of God in the Shorter Catechism. We've looked at the things that we're to believe concerning God in the first portion of the Catechism. Then we transitioned into the duty that God requires of us. And particularly, we've been looking at the Ten Commandments. And today, we transition from the first part of our duty, which is our duty to God, to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And that being explained by the first table of the law, the first, second, third, and fourth commandments. Now we come to the second table of the law, which explains our duty that we owe to our neighbor. So we looked at the fifth commandment itself. The fifth commandment is honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. And then question 64, what is required in the fifth commandment? First is, the fifth commandment requireth the preserving the honor. Now, to preserve something is to make sure that it doesn't waste away before it might happen to waste away. That's the idea of preservation. You stop it from being decayed or wasting away by saving it beforehand. So, first, we'll look at Leviticus 19, verses 2 and 3, where the Lord says, speak unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, and say unto them, ye shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. Ye shall fear every man his mother and his father, and keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. Notice here a couple of things, very important principles. Many believe that the fourth commandment is the keeper of both tables of the law, because it's like a bridge that enables us to worship God and to glorify God. And also embedded in the fourth commandment is the duty that we owe to our neighbor. Specifically, if you have servants or children, you have people who live in your land, that you owe a duty to them on the Sabbath as well as a duty directly to God. But in any case, you'll notice here that God joins together in the code of holiness, be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. He joins together reverence and respect, fear is what he calls it, for his mother and his father. And what's interesting about that is ordinarily it's the father first and the mother second. But because a disregard is usually had for women because of their weakness, and he's addressing men as the heads of their families, he makes sure to point out, do not despise your mother, as Solomon says, when she is old. Still keep that attitude of reverence toward your mom as well as your dad. So he joins together that then with the Sabbath, and keep my Sabbath. So the fifth commandment and the fourth commandment, sometimes we talk about them both being like a bridge. Each side of the bridge that holds together the law as a totality, as a unit, you have these two commandments in a special way upholding both. All right. Malachi chapter 1, verse 6 says, a son honoreth his father, and a servant his master. If then I be a father, where is mine honor? And if I be a master, where is my fear? Notice, God is speaking to the Levites here in Malachi, and he's reinforcing the duty that the Levites owe to him. And he's illustrating the duty that they owe to God from the duties that they owe to one another. If you have a son, he owes honor to his father. If you have a slave, he owes honor to his master. And if I'm your father and your master, you Levites, why don't you honor me? So he's basing this truth about their duty to God based off of something that they recognize in their daily lives, a naturally known truth. We ought to honor our fathers. A servant ought to honor his master. So this is the idea of preserving the honor, giving fear or reverence, giving honor to whom honor is due. All right, then number two there on your handout, the fifth commandment requireth the preserving the honor and performing the duties. Okay, so on the one hand, you have an internal attitude of respect and fear and reverence. On the other hand, there are specific duties that you must perform. Now, it's very important to recognize that in the Bible, there are two sides, or more actually, but there are at least two sides to each action. There is the motivation, the internal attitude a person has, the reasons why they do things, and then there's the external action itself. And we looked at this on Thursday night when we talked about good works and the works of unbelievers. And sometimes the action that they do for the matter of it might be right and commanded by God, but they don't do it by faith, they don't do it for the glory of God, and therefore it's sinful, but it would be more sinful if they didn't do the right action. So they should still do the right action externally, that's performing the duties, but there's also the preserving the honor. So God requires that they meet together for an action to be pleasing to Him. Do the right thing with the right attitude. That's what he's saying here. Preserve the honor, that's your attitude, and perform the duties. Now this word duty is a very important word. It means to owe something to someone. It means that you have a debt. And the way that you pay the debt is by doing the specific things that are required of your station. 1 Kings chapter 2. This is Solomon the king with his mother Bathsheba. Bathsheba therefore went unto King Solomon to speak unto him for Adonijah. And the king rose up to meet her and bowed himself unto her and sat down on his throne and caused a seat to be set for the king's mother. And she sat on his right hand. Now this is very significant that it describes that he is king. Because so far as he is king, he is her superior. She is subject to the king. So far as she is his mother, he is subject unto her. You see that? Specifically by the duties that he performs of respect for her, which are manifold. He rises up to meet her. Then he bows himself unto her. And then he causes a seat to be set for her at his right hand. All those are very significant. They all show us and demonstrate that he honored his mother, even in her old age, even in her inferiority in a civil sense. There is a superiority in the family sense as well as in the sense of her age, but particularly it's his mother. And that's why he honors her in this way. Although you find that Timothy is told to show reverence to those who are older than him, even though he is their pastor and authority in the church. So he's told that he should address the older women as mothers, and he's to address the older men as fathers. He's to appeal to them as fathers, he's told. Not to rebuke them sharply, but to appeal when he speaks to them in such a way that he recognizes, you are my superior in age, though I am your superior perhaps in gifts, but at least in office, he was their superior. And Solomon does the same thing. I am her superior in office, but not in terms of age or family structure. And so he still has this duty to his mother to preserve the honor and here to perform these duties. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 17 and 18, we read this. Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. Now here we see the duties that we owe to various types of people. That's what Peter is doing. Honor all men. It doesn't matter whether they're above you, below you, or you're equal. There's a duty of honor that you owe to all. And he doesn't actually use the word men. It's just honor all. And then he's going to give particulars of how does that look. The brotherhood are those that are your equals because you're joined together in one family. Your brothers and your sisters are like your equals. You have one father and they are your brothers. Okay? So this is the idea here, your equals. Fear God is the infinite superior above all. Honor the king, he's your civil superior. If you happen to be a slave, you're to be subject. That's the thing you're supposed to do. Now, being subject doesn't necessarily mean that you have... It's not a reference necessarily to the attitude, although that's important as well. It's more of subjecting yourself to their order. That's what that means. They issue an order, you fall under that order. Do what you're told, in other words, is the idea of subjection. When you receive a command, you follow it. When you hear a prohibition, you avoid it. That's the idea. So subject to your masters. And then he addresses the attitude with all fear. Fear to offend them, fear of not doing what they say, reverence and respect internally in your heart and attitude, and subjection in your actions. That's the idea there. And actually, those two can sum up the duties that inferiors owe to their superiors. Subjection and fear. Those two encompass 80%, I would say, of the duties of most who are under authority. All right, so, letter C, Leviticus 19, 32 through 36. Thou shalt rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man and fear thy God. So these are duties, right? He's not necessarily referring to the attitude you have about them, but he is referring to the actions that express an appropriate attitude. A hoary head is where it's all white, graying and white. Rise up. He's older than you. Show him deference and respect. Honor his face. Don't think down upon him because he's aged, and disrespect him. When his presence is made known, that's the face, a presence of someone, then you honor it. You honor his presence. That's why you rise up. And then he reminds them of the fear of God, just like Peter does. Fear thy God. I am the Lord. Verse 33, and if a stranger sojourn with thee in your land, ye shall not vex him. But the stranger that dwelleth with you shall be unto you as one born among you, and thou shalt love him as thyself. For ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord thy God. Okay, so here you have someone who is your inferior. Do you know foreigners are your inferiors? Because when they come into your land, they don't have connections, do they? They might not have extended family around. They might not speak the same language. They don't own land. They can't necessarily defend themselves from attack like you can, because you have all these connections. So you are their superior. How do you treat your inferior? We've talked about your superior in age, the man with the hoary head. You honor him. Honor his presence. Stand up in his presence. But when you have your inferior, how do you treat him? Well, he says, you're to treat him like a homeborn. You're not to be unjust. You're not to be wicked and vengeful and evil because you can get away with it. And there's nothing he can do about it. What's he going to do? Talk to the magistrate? He doesn't even speak the language. You could be tempted to take advantage of that person. Now, by the way, this does not mean that Israel wasn't allowed to discriminate against their sojourners. They could. They could keep them as permanent slaves. And an Israelite, a homeborn, they could only keep them for 6 years, and then they had to let them go. So they could discriminate against the sojourner in certain ways. So this isn't like a blanket, treat him like a homeborn as if there's no difference between you and him. Yes, there is a difference. But that does not give you the right to be wicked and to be spiteful and malicious and to seek to do evil because you think, I'm going to get away with this. That's why he says, put yourself in his shoes. Love him as thyself. You were strangers in the land of Egypt. You remember how they took advantage of you? Don't be like that. And then he goes on, verse 35, ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat yard, in weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin shall ye have. Okay, so this again refers to the superiority of a merchant. He's got the goods. He can play tricks on people because he has the systems in place to do the measurements that say, oh, this is an ephah, and it's actually not quite an ephah. So he gives you a little bit less than an ephah, but you think, I'm getting an ephah. So he's robbing from you because he has a position of power over you. So here we have a prohibition for merchants or wealthy people not to oppress those who come to buy their goods. They depend on you, and you give them less and less. If you ever, when I was a kid, it was a gallon of ice cream. Let's go get a gallon of ice cream. And then it became a half gallon of ice cream. And then I still think of it as a half gallon of ice cream, and it's not actually a half gallon. Why is that? Because they're robbing me. Little by little, we'll just make it a little smaller. Oh, look at that big box of cereal. Then you take out the little plastic bag and you set it on the table, and it's got like five little crumbs in there. And this is a big puffy thing with a couple little crumbs at the bottom. That's what this is talking about. You make people think your goods are a lot. So to the eye, that looks like a lot of cereal. Well, in actuality, it's not really a lot of cereal. So this is the idea. If you have the advantage of the person and they're buying from you, how should you treat them? Well, we have duties to one another. We should perform them. All right, page 2 of your handout. Letter D at the top from 1 Peter 5:5. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you, be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility, for God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. So Peter here addresses the duties of those who are younger. You have superiors in age. You ought to submit yourselves to them. This is not like a blanket statement that if someone is a year older than me, they can tell me what to do. That's not what he's saying. What he's referring to is the attitude of humility that we should have toward those who are our superiors. We ought to be willing to listen to them. We ought to come under them, and if they give us wise counsel, we ought to listen very carefully. If an older person encourages you to sin, we have a higher duty to God. The fear of God supersedes the second table of the law. Respect for your superiors is in the Lord, and therefore they cannot command you to do evil. So this is talking about the general attitude of submission and of respect that we owe for those who are older than us, ye younger. And then he talks about mutual subjection, be subject one to another, being clothed with humility, because as equals, we even ought to prefer one another in love. We ought to look out for the advancement of the other person. We ought to go before one another in showing honor, and we'll look at that in Romans 12 in a little bit. But these are all duties that we owe to various sorts of people. And that brings us to number 3. The 5th commandment requireth the preserving the honor and performing the duties belonging to everyone in their several places and relations as superiors, inferiors, or equals. Now those words to a modern sort of person would be offensive. What do you mean, superiors? What do you mean, inferiors? That's not right. Everybody's the same, man. We're all equal, dude. How could you tell me that somebody's better than me? Well, this is what the Lord says. And when he refers to superiority, inferiority, or equality, he's talking about those several places and relations. So there are specific relations that are superior. If someone is older than you, like he says, likewise ye younger, submit yourselves to the elder. If someone has an advancement over you in years, that is a form of superiority. If you have someone who is more intelligent than you or more skilled at a particular thing, that is a form of superiority. If someone has an office like a civil magistrate or a pastor or a parent, that is a form of superiority just by virtue of the office. So there are what we call forms of authority, and then there are real authorities. Real authority consists in the moral respect that is required by a person's behavior. And then there's the formal authority where they happen to fit a specific description. Is this person a mother? Yes. Okay. Well, then they have formal authority. If the mother behaves in a motherly way, she has real authority. And God requires submission not just to the real authority, but also to the formal authority, to the office, in other words. A magistrate might be a foolish magistrate, but they're still a magistrate, and therefore the form of authority exists. I ought to honor the office, even if I don't honor the person. Some people are so wicked that they no longer qualify for the office, and they don't deserve the respect of the office. But generally speaking, we say the default is, if they have the office, honor the office. And so that's the idea here. There are several places. They have superiority by their office, by their giftings, by their age, various types of superiority. And if we don't recognize this, it becomes completely chaotic. If we think everybody's the same and everybody has the same office, everybody has the same position, everybody has the same authority, then it is completely and totally chaotic. All right, now Ephesians chapter 5 refers to this very thing, and then we'll look not just at the duties of those who are under authority, but the duty of those who are in authority. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 21 and 22, and then chapter 6, verses 1 and 5. First, verse 21, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. Then chapter 6, verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then verse 5, servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. Now notice here, there are similarities between these various forms of inferiority, these various places and relations. There is the wife, there is the child, and there is the servant. All of them are under authority, and therefore their duties are similar. Not necessarily identical, but they're framed in the same way. Submission for the wife, obedience for the children, and obedience for the slaves. And then fear and trembling is added, as well as fear being used with the wife, but here fear and trembling is added for the slave. So the idea is that those who are under authority, regardless of whether it's this one, or this one, they have some general overarching themes that match each one, that are appropriate and suitable to each one. Now let's look at the duties of those who are superiors, Ephesians chapter 5, verses 28 and 29, and then chapter 6, verses 4 and 9. First there, verse 28, so ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself, for no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. Then chapter 6, verse 4, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Then verse 9, and ye masters, do the same thing unto them, forbearing threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. So we've looked at, what does the inferior owe to the superior? Now we're seeing there's a mutual duty. It's not a one-way street. It may say in the primary instance, honor thy father and thy mother. It's merely looking at the inferior's duty to the superior. But once you get a hold of the entire Bible, you realize it's not a one-way street. Parents owe duties to their children. Husbands owe duties to their wife. Masters owe duties to their slaves. And for the egalitarian, this is always the place where they want to find fault. This is liable to abuse, and therefore we ought to abolish authority. That's what the temperance movement was all about. Oh, you know, people can use alcohol for bad things, therefore let's get rid of alcohol. Feminism says, you know that the husband's authority can be subject to abuse, let's get rid of marriage. Let's get rid of male-female. Let's pretend like everybody's the same. And the whole idea of the abolitionist movement was, oh, slavery is subject to abuse. Let's get rid of slavery. But you notice God doesn't do that. He says, no, each of these institutions, there are duties that are owed on both sides. Those under authority and those in authority, they have duties to one another. And it's not like it's optional. God's not saying, you masters, do the same thing, forbearing threatening, unless you don't feel like it. You wives, submit yourselves to your husbands unless you had a bad day. You children, obey your parents in the Lord unless you think that they're meanies. Didn't say anything like that. There's nothing about that. There are occasions where a person, for their own safety, might have to flee from a master. In fact, God's law says, for example, if you knock your slave's tooth out, meaning you're using physical abuse with him, he gets to go free. for his tooth's sake. All you got to do is knock the tooth out. He's out. So there's protection that God puts in from a civil perspective for a wife, for a slave, and for children. There are punishments the magistrate should inflict on those who do evil, even in positions of authority. But nevertheless, God never says, let's abolish the mutual duties that you owe to one another because they're subject to abuse. That's what Satan says. Let's take nature and turn it upside down because people have abused the natural order. That's what Satan says, but the gospel teaches no such thing. All right, then Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 16. This is the duties of equals. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love, in honor preferring one another. Okay, so when you have situations of brotherhood, that is a status of equality. So he's addressing the status of equality, even though in some ways there may be superiors and inferiors, in other ways there is equality, which is why Christ said that we're to call one another brethren, call no man your father. That is, don't think of someone as if in this gospel he is your savior and your redeemer. There is one father, even God, he says. So this is the idea here, that we are brethren. Paul refers to the others as his brethren, okay? So he sees them in this sense of equality, even though in another way he had superiority as an apostle of Christ. But we're to be, notice, as equals, kindly affection toward one another with brotherly love. And then second, not just the affection of kindness, but also that honor that prefers one another. Let others go before you. Prefer their interests to your own. Don't just look out for your own things, but the things of others. And the most powerful illustration is how Christ did that, even though he was God over all, blessed forever, yet he came down and put the interests of others before his own. And if that's what Christ did, we ought to do likewise. That's one of the illustrations Paul gives for brotherly humility in Philippians chapter 2. Then he goes on after talking about kindly affectioned, preferring one another. Then he says, verse 13, distributing to the necessities of the saints, given to hospitality. Here's another duty to our equals. When they're in need, help them. When you have goods, share them. That's the idea of hospitality. Your table, your food, your life is open to others. And then verse 15, rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. This is the duty of sympathy that we owe to our equals. We ought to love them, be kindly affectioned, but also the action, the duty. Go and weep with them. Go and rejoice with them. And then verse 16, be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Be not wise in your own conceits. You might think, this my brother is beneath me. This my brother is not that smart. Now, this is a Reformed church here, and in Reformed churches we're all pretty smart. So someone comes in who's not as smart as us, are we going to welcome them as a brother? Or are we going to shun them and say, ha, I'm wise, ha, you are not? No, God says, don't mind high things. Be of the same mind one toward another. Don't think you're better than some other believer just because the gifting God gave you is not the same as what he gave them. They may have gifts that you don't have. In fact, when Paul wrote to the Romans, he said he hoped to have some mutual fruit from his fellowship with them. He didn't just hope that he would build them up. He hoped that they would build him up. That's the great apostle Paul. He's saying that. So that would be true of us, of course. Lesser in our graces and gifts than him. But in any case, we see here the kindly affection, preferring one another. These are duties that equals owe to one another. And even if there is a man of low estate, if he is your brother, you condescend to him. You don't consider, oh, this worldly difference, look how great I am. No, he says, condescend. Come down to his level and bless him. Do good to him. Prefer him in love. So these are the duties of equals. All right, let's close our time together in prayer.